See everyone back again tonight. And tonight we're going to be beginning a little bit of a series. I haven't fully decided if it's just going to be two lessons or if it's going to be three lessons. I'll let you know next month when I preach lesson two if it's going to be two lessons or three lessons. Part of it depends on how much I get covered tonight as well. Now, so before anyone gets me about doing it in the middle while I'm talking, I'm going to go ahead and put it off. So that light is off now. Tonight we're going to be looking at this, and I appreciate Bob reading that, and I appreciate Bob switching the passages this morning and tonight, because I forgot to tell him until the invitation, until we were singing the song before the lesson this morning. So I was glad that he was able to do all that for me. But if you're still there in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, I want us to be reminded of what is going on in this particular section. Paul is writing the Corinthians, and he's telling them, you guys got to do something. You remember in chapter 5, it is where there is this man who is among the Christians there in Corinth, who is a part of the church in Corinth, and he's got his father's wife. So he is sleeping with his father's wife, and there is a big problem about this. The problem is, well, A, he's sleeping with his father's wife, but B, the brethren know about it. And you remember how the brethren feel about this in chapter 5? They have become puffed up about it. They're full of air about it. They know what's going on, but yet they've done nothing about it. And Paul says, hey, I'm done with this guy, and you guys need to too. And we're going to talk more about this particular passage next lesson. But what I want us to see is I want us to get down to the verses that Bob read that go in conjunction with this. That he says, now I told you this before, that you ought not associate with these sexually immoral people, with these idolatrous people, with these covetous people. And he says, now, I'm not talking about people of the world. You know that. Because then you'd have to go out of the world and you can't do that. But he says, I'm talking about someone who is a so-called brother, someone who is known as a brother. Not to even eat with such a one. And this is the very final verse that he says of this. So verse 12, he says, what have I to do with judging outsiders? It is not those inside the church whom you are to judge. God judges those outside. Purge the evil person from among you. Or some of your translations will say, remove the evil person from among you. If you look there very closely at the very last few words of chapter 5, you may see that it's in all caps, or it may look like it's a quotation from somewhere, right? You've got a footnote, if you've got a cross-reference, it may tell you where this comes from. This comes from the book of Deuteronomy. And tonight we're going to be looking at where this phrase is used in the book of Deuteronomy to lay the groundwork, to show that God has always been about discipline. And so what we're going to be studying, and it's things that we don't need to come to hasty conclusions about, is church discipline. Does a church have the right to discipline? Should a church discipline? And we want to be looking at this, and it's going to take some time. So just be gentle about that. Just think about that. And I want us to follow very closely in our Bibles, in our text, to see if this is what churches ought to be doing. How do you do it? Who should you do it to? And why should you do it? Those types of questions will be things that we'll consider. Now, one of the things we want to start with is I said that this is a passage that comes from the book of Deuteronomy. Turn, if you will, to Deuteronomy, the 22nd chapter. This is actually not the first time it's used, but as we're going to begin tonight, that is the way we will begin in Deuteronomy chapter 22. Now, let's get our minds set around what Deuteronomy is. If you've been in the reading schedule and you read through Deuteronomy, this phrase probably jumped out at you several times. Purge the evil one. Purge the evil. Purge the evil. What does it mean to purge something? It means to rid it, right? It's kind of a purification process. You're trying to get something, get rid of something that is not very good. And so you might say that they purged some bad bosses or something along those lines. You're purging the evil. You're purging something that doesn't belong. Purge the evil. Get rid of it. Purify yourselves in a sentence. That's among you. So the setting for Deuteronomy is children of Israel, right? They just completed and they're on the verge of completing their 40 years of wandering the wilderness for rebelling against God. The generation that came out of Egypt that had been delivered from slavery, they're about to, God says, go take the promised land. And they say, but there are giants in the land. And there are fortified cities in the land. And God says, okay, if you don't want to go, you can die in the wilderness and your children can go in. And so that's what happens. It's now the children, they're getting ready to go in. And they're preparing to go into this land of Canaan. And what Deuteronomy is Moses is preparing the people for life is to be like in Canaan. When they go in, this is what you are to do. And Deuteronomy, if you were to break it down in Greek, which, by the way, the Old Testament is not written in Greek, but the Septuagint version, where it is a Greek translation, Deutero, or Mike knows how to pronounce it, so just bear with me, is second, and nomos, law. It's the second law. It's the second giving of the law. This is not the first time these people would have laws given, but Deuteronomy is Moses going through and giving these speeches of this is how you are to live. This is what life will be like when you go into Canaan. And so we need to remember as well that these laws, these things that you're speaking, serve both religious purpose and judicial purpose. Because the children of Israel, their constitution was the law of Moses. The children of Israel, their spiritual laws were the law of Moses. So they're serving kind of both purposes. But we want to see basic principles of when God said, purge the evil that is among you. So we need to remember that. Now, in the New Testament, right, not all of the laws are the same as judicial laws. But they are religious, spiritual in their nature. We'll talk more about that in the coming lessons. Just kind of remember that these laws also served as the court downtown Montclair as well. So as we look at it, tonight we're going to look at these four groups. I've just labeled them in these four groups. That are told to be purged from Israel, from the people of Israel. And so I hope that we can see this. So we'll be looking at these four. The sexually immoral, the idolaters, the rebellious, and those who commit harm to others, the harmful people. And so let's just go ahead and begin. We're going to start there in chapter 22. And all of these passages will come from Deuteronomy for the rest of the time, so we'll be there. Deuteronomy chapter 22. Notice this, starting verse 13. He begins off by talking about someone who has basically been married. And they have been married and they have been supposed as a virgin, it appears. That the person he gets his wife, and he comes and he says, man, I hate my wife. I don't want my wife anymore. And he brings this accusation against her that she is not a virgin. He thought she was a virgin, but she's not. And notice what happens. Let's start in verse 16. And the father of the young woman shall say to the elders, I gave my daughter to this man to marry, and he hates her. And behold, he has accused her of misconduct, saying, I did not find in your daughter evidence of virginity. And yet this is the evidence of my daughter's virginity, and they shall spread the cloak before the elders of the city. So he says, okay, I don't have the evidence. You're wanting evidence? Here's the evidence that indeed she was. So notice verse 18. Then the elders of that city shall take the man and whip him, and they shall fine him 100 shekels of silver and give them to the father of the young man because he has brought a bad name upon a virgin of Israel, and she shall be his wife, and he may not divorce her all his days. So if it's not true, if he turns out, it's go. Now notice verse 20. But if the thing is true, if in fact she was not a virgin when she married him and thought that this was the case, but if the thing is true, that the evidence of the virginity was not found in the young woman, then they shall bring out the young woman to the door of her father's house, and the men of her city shall stone her to death with stones, because she has done an outrageous thing in Israel by whoring in her father's house. So you shall purge the evil from your midst. If the evidence comes back and she is not what she claimed to be, she has done an outrageous thing and is to be stoned. Purge the evil from your midst. Keep reading. Look at the next group. We now deal with adultery. An adulterer, verse 22. If a man is found lying with the wife of another man, both of them shall die. The man who lay with the woman and the woman, you shall purge the evil from Israel. It's not that just one of them is killed in this situation. Remember in the last one, the guy wasn't killed because she was the one who lied. She was the one who wasn't this virgin that she said she was. Here, both of them are committing sexual immorality, and so both the man and the woman are both to be killed. You purge the evil from Israel. Now notice, keep reading. Verse 23, we've got another group. We've got someone who's basically engaged to a man. He's betrothed. It's a little more than engaged. You remember, Mary is betrothed to Joseph. Basically married, but just not going through the full process. Well, verse 23. If there's a betrothed virgin, and a man meets her in the city and lies with her, then you shall bring them out of the gate of the city, and you shall stone them to death with stones. The young woman, because she did not cry for help, though she was in the city, and the man, because he violated his neighbor's wife, so you shall purge the evil from your midst. You've got a woman who basically belongs to another man. And she is in the city, so you can imagine the people will be around. She's in the city, and this guy who is not hers comes and takes her. And they lie together. Moses says, they both die. Because she was in the city, she didn't cry for help. She didn't try to stop the thing. And the guy, because he took another man's, and notice what it says, verse 24, he violated his neighbor's wife. He already took something. He took his neighbor's wife. Both are to be purged. You see the seriousness of this sexual immorality? It's not some kind of light thing. Oh, they just made a mistake. It's, oh, they need to be put out. This is serious. They need to be removed from Israel. And the removing is this death. That seems harsh, doesn't it? That's what the Lord is saying. Now notice there's this next story. There's this next event. And it doesn't result in someone dying. It's basically a woman gets raped. She does not die from this. Notice this, verse 25. But in the open country, a man meets a young woman who is betrothed, and the man seizes her and lies with her. Only the man who lay with her shall die. But you shall do nothing to the woman. She has committed no offense punishable by death. For in the case like that of a man attacking and murdering his neighbor, because he met her in the open country, and though the betrothed young woman cried for help, there was no one to rescue her. Remember our lady a second ago. She's in the city where everyone's at. She's not crying for help. We've got this lady who's out in the open country, and she belongs to another man, but a guy comes and seizes her and takes her. And she cries for help. There's a difference there. The man shall be put to death, but not the woman. This wasn't a consensual thing. She wanted out because no one was there to rescue her. God makes special circumstances. Just because you do something doesn't mean you're straight up dead. But notice the seriousness of the sexual immorality. Purge the evil from your midst. That's group number one. That's all the passages that we have in Deuteronomy on sexually immoral. But you can see that relating to 1 Corinthians chapter 5. When you have a man sleeping with his father's wife. So that would put him in what category? The adulterer, right? So what does that mean both should be? Both should be dead. So let's go on to our next group. Let's go on to the group that is mentioned first in the book of Deuteronomy. The idolaters. Turn to Deuteronomy chapter 13. And this is the very first time that you're going to see this phrase used in the book of Deuteronomy if you're reading through it. And it's because this is a real temptation. But there's this guy who arises who's a false prophet. And notice this verse 1. He says, if a prophet or a dreamer of dreams, someone who's got the ability to interpret dreams, arises among you and gives you a sign or a wonder. So let's see what this guy's doing. He's a prophet, and he's got the ability to perform a miracle. He gives you one of these miracles. He gives you one of these signs. And the sign of verse 2, a sign of the wonder that he tells you comes to pass. So what happens? And if he says, let us go after other gods, which you have not known, and let us serve them. What's he saying? I've got a miracle here, and I'm hearing, let us go serve other gods. God said, go? No. Look at verse 3. You shall not listen to the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams. For the Lord your God is testing you to know whether you love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul. You shall walk after the Lord your God and fear Him and keep His commandments and obey His voice, and you shall serve Him and hold fast to Him. He said, I don't care if this dude is performing miracles. If he says go after other gods, it is a test to see if you love the Lord with all your heart. If you will hold fast to Him. Well, verse 5. But that prophet or dreamer of dreams shall be put to death, because he has taught rebellion against the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt and redeemed you out of the house of slavery to make you leave the way in which the Lord your God commanded you to walk. So you shall purge the evil from your midst. This guy maybe one time was a good prophet. Get rid of him. He is teaching rebellion against God, the God who called you out of darkness. Do not follow him. It is a test to see, do you love the Lord with all your heart? So a false prophet, keep reading here in this chapter. This is, okay, what if someone of your family or a close friend tells you to go after another God? Look at verse 6. If your brother, the son of your mother, or your son, or your daughter, or the wife you embrace, or your friend who is your own soul, entices you secretly. So who are we talking about here? We're talking about the people who are the closest to you. Your family, your brother, your mother, your sister, your wife, your friends. If those closest to you say in verse 6, they entice you secretly, saying, let us go and serve other gods, which neither you nor your fathers have known, some of the gods of the peoples who are around you, whether near or far off from you, from the end of the earth to the other, you shall not yield to him or listen to him, nor shall your eye pity him, nor shall you spare him, nor shall you conceal him, but you shall kill him. And your hand shall be first against him to put him to death, and afterward the hand of all the people. You shall stone him to death with stones, because he sought to draw you away from the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of slavery. And all Israel shall hear and fear, and never again do any such wickedness that is among them. Doesn't that seem a bit harsh? Doesn't that seem that God, I don't know about that. Notice how it is in verse 6. How did this close friend, relative, come to you? Secretly. They come secretly. What does he say in verse 8? Don't pity him. Notice the language here. You shall not yield to him or listen to him. Keep reading. Nor shall your eye pity him, nor shall you spare him, nor shall you conceal him, hide him. You don't listen to him for a second. He is as close to you as anyone else, but you can't pity him because he is trying to lead you away from the Lord your God. For you shall kill him. And notice there in verse 9, who gets to do it first? Your hand shall be against him first. Can you imagine that situation? If you're children of Israel, and let's say your wife comes to you and says, hey, let's go serve these other gods. Let's say you're Solomon. And your wife says, hey, let's go serve all these other gods. Imagine trying to fill that stone. And then all of Israel, notice that? All the men, no stone. This is an all-encompassing thing. And it is very personal. But notice what will happen in verse 11, and we'll see this several times throughout. All Israel will hear and fear, so that there will not be this great wickedness again. One of the purposes of this extreme, harsh punishment by God is so that others will hear and they'll be afraid and they won't do the same things. That's one of the biggest purposes of discipline, to keep others from doing the same thing. And you see this all the time. You hear about these countries, right? Maybe I think it's the Middle East, where a thief, if he is caught stealing, what happens to him? His arm is cut off. If he's caught stealing with, again, what happens? His other arm's cut off. You see a lot of folks walking around, and you realize, I don't want to steal. They don't go sit in prison for a while. They lose their limbs. They can't do it anymore. You're walking around, you're thinking, I don't want to lose my arm. I need my arm to work. I need to make money. It's a deterrent. Same thing with our prison systems, aren't they? They ratchet things up really tough so people will say, don't go out and murder this person. And some people think about that when they get really mad at someone. They think, man, I can't go through with this. I'm having thoughts about it. I can't do it because I don't want to go spend the rest of my life in prison. It's a deterrent. That's part of what this discipline is. Close family member. Notice, keep reading in our text here. Actually, it's chapter 17. Flip over to chapter 17. These idolaters. Chapter 17, this is just kind of a more generic if it's anyone. That case, it was someone who was very close to you. But, verse 2, if there's found anyone among you, Deuteronomy chapter 17, with any of your towns, that the Lord your God is giving you a man or a woman who does what is evil in the sight of the Lord and is transgressing his covenant and has gone and served other gods and worshiped them or the sun or the moon or any of the hosts of heaven which I forbid. And it is told you and you hear of it. So how do they find out about this? Did they see it firsthand? You're told of it and you hear it. Notice what he says to do. It's told of you and you hear of it. Then you shall inquire diligently. And if it is true and certain that such an abomination has been done in Israel, then you shall bring out to your gates that man or woman who has done this evil thing, and you shall stone that man or woman to death with stone. On the evidence of two witnesses or of three witnesses, the one who is to die shall be put to death. A person shall not be put to death on the evidence of one witness. And the hand of the witnesses shall be first against him to put him to death. And afterward the hand of all the people. So you shall purge the evil from your midst. If you hear, and this is hearsay, you hear it, you go and you inquire diligently about it. It's not something you just let go by on the wayside. You inquire diligently. You put effort into this. And if it is found to be true and it is certain, then they shall be put to death. But here's where we have another one of those principles about what happens. It's not the witness of one. One witness cannot do this. But at the mouth of two or three witnesses. So someone, as we're going to see in a second, someone just can't come up and make some accusation. There is proof that this person did it. And notice again whose hand is first in the slave. That will be verse 7. The hand of the witnesses shall be first. And then all the people of Israel. You remember the story there in John chapter 8 when they bring, the Jews bring this woman who has been caught in adultery, right? Remember what Jesus says to them? You who's without sin, cast the first stone. I'm not exactly sure what the significance of casting the first stone is, except for that you saw it, you're witness of it. But yet it's, which one of you is going to do it? Which one's going to do it? But I find that interesting in light of this. You who is without sin, cast the first stone. That kind of same language. But that's what you see with done with idolaters. So the sexually immoral, knocked out. Those who serve other gods, knocked out, purged. What about these rebels? And we could use idolaters, they're rebels, but we're just talking about rebellious. Someone who is a rebel against a priest or a judge, the one who has been put in position to give verdicts. Look at this in chapter 17, reading down to verse 8. He says, so if any case arises requiring decisions between one kind of homicide and another, or one kind of legal right in another, or one kind of assault in another, and it's too difficult for you, then you shall arise and go to the place that the Lord your God will choose. So, if there's some situation between you, and you can't figure out the answer, and it's too difficult for you to work out in the city, then you'll go to the place where the judge is, or the place where the priests are set up who are set to judge. So you go to them. And so this is what happens. You go to them, and they go through the process, and they realize, okay, this is what needs to be done. And so they give their verdict. And so notice let's start at verse 10. Actually, verse 9. You shall come to the Levitical priest and to the judge who is in the office in those days, and you shall consult them. And they shall declare to you the decisions. They're going to make it. But verse 10. Then you shall do according to what they declare to you from that place that the Lord will choose. And you shall be careful to do according to all that they direct you. So they give you a verdict, and you do it. But notice verse 11. And according to the instructions that they give you, and according to the decision which they pronounce you, you shall do. You shall not turn aside from the verdict, and they declare to you either to the right hand or to the left. The man who acts presumptuously by not obeying the priest who stands to minister before the Lord your God, or the judge, that man shall die. So you shall purge the evil from Israel. And all the people shall hear and fear and not act presumptuously again. You got a guy who is so bold that he flat out refuses to do what the judge and the priest tells him to do. You don't put up with it. That one needs to be purged from Israel. And notice again, all Israel will hear and fear and never do it again. There's a purpose behind it. It's not just we don't like this guy. It's his heart is set on rebellion. He won't do what the laws are. You need to do the laws, keep the laws. Well, we know this one pretty well too. And as children, it's probably a good thing we don't live in this time. Notice what happens with the rebellious child. Look in chapter 21, starting in verse 18. If a man has a stubborn and rebellious son who will not obey the voice of his father or the voice of his mother, and though they discipline him, he will not listen to him. So let's get our situation. We've got a child, a son, who is just refusing to obey his parents. He won't listen to his father. He won't listen to his mother. But the parents have been trying to rebuke him. And they disciplined him. But yet nothing is coming of it. Then notice what they'll do in verse 19. Then his father and his mother shall take hold of him and bring him out to the elders of his city at the gate of the place where he lives. And they shall say to the elders of his city, "This our son is stubborn and rebellious. He will not obey our voice. He is a glutton and a drunkard." Then all of the men of the city shall stone him to death with stones. So you shall purge the evil from your midst, and all Israel will hear and fear. The child had an opportunity. He was rebuked, but yet he refused to obey. So notice who has to again take him for this process. It's up to the parents. The parents take him to the elder of the city and bring the accusation against him and say, "Our son, he won't listen." Then all the men of the city shall stone him. You got a feeling all of us at some point rebelled against our parents, didn't we? I know I did. And I'm still alive. I wonder how many children of Israel this happened to. You can think of a couple sons that it was supposed to happen to, right? You can think about Eli's sons, where Eli hears what they're doing. They're sleeping with these women and they're taking more food than what they ought to as priests. It says that Eli rebuked him. But yet, he didn't go through the process. They refused. And he's a priest and he wouldn't deliver his own sons over. So we know what happens, right? The Lord kills the sons and Eli. There is responsibility, even if it is your own child. You've got to be the one to do it. But notice again, all Israel will hear and fear. Well, you talk about striking fear in the heart of a kid, right? Why didn't Johnny show up to school? Oh, because he rebelled against his parents. He's a drunkard and a glutton. I probably ought to obey my parents, not be a drunkard or a glutton. There be some real fear in the heart of the children. It's got a purpose. And the last group, the fourth group that we want to look at, are these people who are harmful. We looked at the sexually immoral, we looked at these idolaters, those who are rebellious in their hearts. Now we want to look at these harmful people, those who do harm to others. And so, you remember in chapter 19, you look over to chapter 19. You remember in Israel there were these cities called cities of refuge. So if a man or a woman accidentally killed someone else, they would flee to this city and they would be safe in the city. The person who was there to get revenge on them could not. It's kind of like in hide and go seek or tag, you got a base. And you go and you can run to the base, and if you're touching the tree, then the person who's it can't tag you. Well, it's the same thing. There's a city of refuge for those who have killed someone else accidentally. There's a place for them to have refuge, and they got to stay within the walls. If they go outside the city walls, then they're free game. But if they're inside the city walls, then they cannot be touched. But sometimes people would go to the city, and they would try to get away with this. So notice in verse 11 of chapter 19. "But if anyone hates his brother, and lies in wait for him, and attacks him, and strikes him fatally so that he dies, and he flees into one of these cities, then the elders of the city shall send and take him from there and hand him over to the avenger of blood so that he may die. Your eye shall not pity him, but you shall purge the guilt of the innocent from Israel so that it may be well with you." So what you got is you got a murderer. He was lying in wait. He was trying to kill this dude, and so he kills him. And then he goes and he tries to run hide in the city. And it comes out that he hates his brother and he kills him. What are the elders supposed to do? He goes and he hands him to the one who was supposed to take vengeance or had the right to take vengeance. And he kills him. it's justice. That's the way it is. And notice what it says in verse 13. Purge the guilt of the innocent. There's some guilt that needs to be paid. You purge it, you get rid of this, so that it may be well with you. What does this dude murdering someone else have to do with all of Israel? Well, you think about what happens when they go into Canaan. And they've been told in the book of Deuteronomy that everything that they take from these cities, unless they're described otherwise, should be devoted to destruction. They're told everything in Jericho is not for you. But you remember a guy by the name of Achan, right? And Achan takes some garments for himself, he takes a little bit of money, and he digs a hole in his tent, and he puts his stuff in the bottom of his tent, and he covers it back up, and none of Israel knows about it. And so they've just defeated Jericho, this great fortified city, huge city, and now it's time to go take the smallest town, Ai. And so they scope out Ai, and they're like, man, we don't need to send everybody. So they send just a few people. And you know what? Remember what happens at Ai? The only defeat that we have mentioned in the book of Joshua? 36 men of Israel are killed, and they go running back. And Joshua, the leader, is thinking, why? Remember what God said? There's sin in the camp. And so they had to go through this process of finding out who's the one, who's responsible for it. And it finally comes down to that it's Achan. And that Achan had hid these things. And he admits to it. Remember what they did with Achan? They stoned him. He and his family. Because apparently they knew about it. That's what happens when Israel doesn't purge the way they're supposed to. Bad things happen. You do what is right so that it is well with you, he said. Let's go to another one. In chapter 19, following verses, verse 15. And a single witness, so you got a false witness who comes up. A single witness shall not suffice against a person for any crime or for any wrong in connection with any offense that he has committed. Only on the evidence of two or three witnesses shall a charge be established. So again, we see that again. Not only once, we see it again. It has to be two or three, not one person. Notice verse 16. So if a malicious witness arises to accuse a person of wrongdoing. So a witness rises up and he says, okay, this person did wrong. Verse 17. Then both parties to dispute shall appear before the Lord, before the priests and the judges who were in office in those days. And the judges shall inquire diligently. And if the witness is a false witness and has accused his brother falsely, then you shall do to him as he is meant to do to his brother. So you shall purge the evil from amongst the from your midst. And the rest of Israel, and the rest shall hear and fear, and shall never again commit any such evil among you. Your eye shall not pity. It shall be life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. You got a guy who wants to do harm to someone else. And he's speaking falsely. He has to go. Whatever he wanted to do to the other, it comes back on him. The same thing done to him. Not just one witness. And you remember some false witnesses who arise in Jesus' trial, right? They're trying to get false witnesses. And you remember, the text says, there were many false witnesses. And they had two who kind of sounded the same in their stories, but they were different. But no one cared because the courts were corrupt. The people were not doing as they were supposed to. The false witnesses, all many of them should have died. But not one of them. Instead, the innocent man died. False witnesses were to be purged. Then we've got this interesting one, these kidnappers, in chapter 24 and verse 7. Of if you steal your brother, and you make him your slave, or you sell him to be a slave to someone else. Notice verse 7 of chapter 24. If a man is found stealing one of his brothers of the people of Israel, and he treats him as a slave or sells him, then that thief shall die. So you shall purge the evil from your midst. You can't kidnap him and get away with it. Purge the evil from your midst. So what about if you find a dead body on the side of the road? Chapter 21 talks about that. Where you got this dead dude lying in the grass. So kind of think about the story of the Good Samaritan. Where there is a dude who is beaten by robbers and he is left for dead. Let's say he dies. And people come along and they find this body. They're trying to figure out, how did this guy get killed? This is the procedure of what happens. Verse 1 of chapter 21. If the land that the Lord your God is giving you to possess, someone is found slain, lying in the open country, and it is not known who killed him, then your elders and your judges shall come out, and they shall measure the distance to the surrounding cities. And the elders of the cities that is nearest to the slain man shall take a heifer that has never been worked and has not been pulled in the yoke. So all those elders of the cities come together, they find out, okay, which one is closest? The closest elders, they now got to take a heifer that has never been yoked, nothing has ever happened to it. It's basically fresh. It's innocent, in a sense. So notice verse 4. The elders of that city shall bring the heifer down to the valley with running water, which is neither plowed nor sown, and shall break the heifer's neck there in the valley. Then the priests, the sons of Levi, shall come forward, for the Lord your God has chosen them to minister to him and to bless in the name of the Lord, and by their word every dispute and every assault shall be settled. And all the elders of that city nearest to the slain man shall wash their hands over the heifer whose neck was broken in the valley. And they shall testify, our hands did not shed this blood, nor did our eyes see it shed. Accept atonement, O Lord, for your people Israel, whom you have redeemed, and do not set the guilt of innocent blood in the midst of your people Israel, so that the blood guilt for atoneful, be atoneful. So you shall purge the guilt of the innocent blood from your midst when you do what is right in the sight of the Lord. That heifer had to be killed. That heifer was being offered, and the elders of the city were washing their hands of the situation, saying, we don't know who did it. Testifying in court, we don't know who did it. They washed themselves, and they asked the Lord to forgive and to atone. And what's the Lord do? He takes the guilt from out of Israel. But yet, something had to die. Takes the guilt from the man. There is something that would have come on for this innocent man slain. Well, that's all of that. So let's just kind of recap some things that we want to hold on to, okay? First off, when we're talking about discipline, when we're talking about purging the evil, it comes at the establishment of two or three witnesses. It is not a I see, see. It's a two or three witnesses kind of thing. Notice also that all became involved in this. The whole city or all of Israel is mentioned many times in our text. And we highlighted it some, but other times we didn't. The whole church becomes responsible in church discipline. And third, part of the discipline is intended to strike fear in the heart of people so that the evil will be stopped. That is one of the ultimate purposes. That is one of the main purposes of discipline. To stop others from doing the same things. So we'll hold on to those and we'll come back to them as we progress in this series. Next time we're going to talk more about 1 Corinthians chapter 5. And then we'll talk about, well, how do you go about getting these two or three witnesses? And all of this stuff. Tonight has not been about how you ought to become a Christian. But tonight should have struck some fear in us about how serious God takes sin. And it's to the point where a father would have to take his child, or a husband would have to take his wife and have them killed because of the seriousness of this. If you've got sin in your life, And you know what you need to do to remove that. Whether it be ask God to forgive you or whether it be to be washed clean of your sins. Don't delay any longer. Don't wait any longer. Don't have the ultimate death, the eternal spiritual death, being separated from God. Don't allow yourself to do that. Won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?